Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, it's Jonathan Goldhill, and welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. Today, my guest is from Down Under, Jackson Milan, the wealth mentor, has spent the last 14 years helping service businesses understand the language of money and manufacture financial freedom for themselves and their families. He has successfully helped over 1,000 clients build in excess of $1.5 billion in combined wealth and has scaled multiple seven-figure businesses. He is a master of helping business owners make money work for them and turn their business profit into personal wealth. All right. Welcome, the wealth mentor, to the show.
Thank you for having me, mate. I'm looking forward to having a chat.
All right. So you've been in this industry for 10 years. You're not a wealth manager, which is what a lot of people are going to think you are. You're actually a wealth coach. What is a wealth coach? Tell us what that is.
So a wealth coach is somebody who is able to support you to learn how to fish for yourself when it comes to your money. Mm-hmm. I actually started as a traditional financial advisor because I wanted to help people like my parents. Mm-hmm. My parents were business owners. They'd struggled a lot with money. And I figured, okay, well, how about I learn financial advice to help people like them? And I very quickly realized that the financial advice industry and the wealth management industry really only wanted to do two things. Mm-hmm. Help people who already had money, manage their money and make more of it.
Right.
Or sell commission-based products to people like my parents who probably didn't need them.
Right.
And I found myself at a crossroads. And I said, well, okay, there's nothing really that exists right now that I can see that helps people who are just getting started or are struggling, or in Australia, what we call them Aussie battlers, to basically create a game plan, understand the fundamentals, and just take good, smart, common sense action to help them get on track for financial freedom. So I've been the term financial advisor. I created the term wealth coach, and I've been working with my clients to help them take control of their money and get back into their financial driver's seat and start working towards financial freedom for themselves.
That's awesome. So you've written a book. It's called Enjoy the Journey. And the subtitle is Creating Wealth and Living the Life You Desire. Tell us a little about your book.
To be honest, Jonathan, because of my upbringing and my parents didn't have much, there were things that I went without. And I've come to realize as an adult, I also have ADHD. So I'm terrible at deferring gratification, coupled with the fact that when I started making adult money, I just wanted to spend it all and make up for lost time in my childhood. And I really struggled with the traditional mantras that came with wealth and investing, that you need to squirrel away every last red cent and you need to sacrifice today in order for a greater tomorrow. And I found myself always stopping and saying, well, that doesn't really resonate with me. And I was living hand to mouth, and I saw many of my clients doing the same. But I asked myself the question, who made those rules? Who invented this idea of having to shrink yourself wealthy? Because that's what traditional financial planning is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, well, okay, well, why does that have to happen? And the only reason that occurs is because there is a limited amount of means, meaning that you need to make a sacrificial choice. But what if, as business owners, we could calculate the financial means required to have our cake and eat it too? We call it the cake method. And it comes down to defining, what does your ideal lifestyle look like? Where do you want to live? What are the holidays you want to go on? What schools do you want to send your kids to? What are all the experiences, hobbies, and things that you want to have available? And what do you want your future to look like when it comes to creating financial freedom, so you don't have to necessarily work to support the lifestyle that you desire. And then I came up with the mantra of living for today and planning for tomorrow. And my whole book is about flipping this shrink yourself wealthy idea of financial planning and having an abundance-based perspective, as we should have as entrepreneurs, to just manufacture enough financial means to have our cake and eat it too, do everything that we want.
I like the idea, but I imagine a lot of people struggling with coming up with a good vision for the future. Because if they're like me, they think like, well, this is it. And this is what my life looks like now. This is good. I'll take this. It's good enough. You know, how do you get people to get into really some creativity, some innovation, or some, disruptive thinking around, what does my life look like today? What do I really want it to look like? How do you get them there, Jackson?
Yeah, it is challenging to start off with. And when I first went down this road, I was probably in my mid-20s by the time I really decided that something needed to change, because I saw myself being the kind of do what I say, not what I do type of person. And my father was very much the same. He was great at giving advice, terrible at taking it for himself. And I found myself thinking, okay, well, what is my problem? And I started searching and researching, and I found a study that was done by Stanford University that surveyed thousands of people that got them to rate themselves in terms of how deeply connected they were to their future self in 10 years' time, illustrated by two overlapping circles. So one circle being your current self, one circle being your future self in 10 years' time. And the amount of overlap that those circles were shown with was how connected you felt to that person. So if they were completely overlapped, it means that you're deeply connected to your future self. So if you're doing something that's detrimental to your future self, you can almost feel the pain. And if they're not overlapped at all, then you've got no connection. You don't really care because you can't put yourself into that position to even think about it. I found myself as the latter. I found it very difficult to visualize my future self and understand those repercussions of today's actions in the future. So I started developing an exercise that we call the 20-year roadmap. And what we basically do is we help our clients map out their lifestyle and financial goals over 20 years, which seems really scary. It was scary for me when I first did it. I stared at a piece of paper for hours trying to work out even past 1 year. And I answered the exercise based on three simple facilitation questions. I asked myself, one, what is fundamentally important to me? What are my non-negotiables? Two, assuming that my non-negotiables have been met, what then becomes my goals, my dreams, and my aspirations? And three, what is the significance of those goals, dreams, and aspirations to me? And what I found is the first time I did it, it was a struggle. But I let the dust settle. I come back to it after a week. I added a little bit more. And then over time, I've added this into my quarterly wealth planning exercise, where I ask myself those questions. I review my roadmap. I update my goals. Things get added. Things get removed. Things get shifted and changed. But it means that I'm always evolving my plan. And the fundamental principle of this is that it is progress over perfection. Mm-hmm. There is no such thing as perfection when it comes to your wealth.
Right.
There's always going to be inefficiencies and things that don't work perfectly. But unless you actually take action and start building what we call money muscle memory, you're never going to build the resilience, the confidence, the clarity to actually get on track for your plan. And that's why so many people sit on the fence, sit on their hands, waiting for the perfect opportunity and just never do anything.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I understand that. I can appreciate the perspective. And I have to address this oftentimes as a coach with my clients themselves. You know, let's just figure out if you don't have a breakthrough idea, then what are some incremental things that you could do? The linking together of which, 5 or 10 of those will look like a breakthrough in your business. So you work with a lot of service businesses, and I'm sure there are problems that stop them from moving forward. What are some of a few of the deadly problems that suck the lifeblood from your business that maybe prevents some of these people from making this progress?
Yeah, there's really three underlying problems that affect the vast majority of service businesses the world around. And it all comes down to an issue that many entrepreneurs have with treating their business as if it's the destination instead of the vehicle.
Right.
Because our business is a vehicle. It is an amazing wealth creation vehicle if we allow it to be. Because we've only got to look at every rich list in the world, and the vast majority of people who are there are business owners. But we see this stark contrast between the 1%, the elite few, And the vast majority of business owners who are hand to mouth that are trying to keep their head above water, that they're just struggling. And the three underlying problems that exist because they treat their business like a baby is that one, they don't have a plan. They don't know exactly what it is that they're working towards, what financial freedom means, what the end game even looks like. They've just created a job for themselves. Two, they don't have the cash. They know they should be buying property. They know they should be investing in the share market. They know that they should be potentially acquiring other businesses or doing things to improve the value of their business, but they just don't have the cash flow to support those things that all of their friends or colleagues are doing. And that's underpinned by the fact that they don't have consistency. Most service businesses who are multi-six figures, seven figures are on this roller coaster. They've just survived another once-in-a-lifetime event. Like, Jonathan, how many once-in-a-lifetime events have you been through so far?
Yep. A handful so far, right? Just in the last few years.
Exactly. And they're gun-shy because they've had one crack a month followed by a terrible one, or one great quarter followed by an average one. And they're so fearful of getting hit for a six again that they sit on their hands and they do nothing. And ultimately, their business becomes a cash-eating monster instead of the profit-making machine that it should be. Mm-hmm. And it's costing them dearly. We're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in opportunity cost as a result of them not fixing and remedying what we call cash flow bottlenecks. And when we fix those, it can create a tremendous difference and huge momentum to skyrocketing yourself to financial freedom.
So you sound very philosophical for a guy who's a wealth coach and a wealth manager. You're not really talking about money. You're not talking about stocks, bonds, real estate, diversification, portfolio. It sounds like a lot of your work is mindset focused. I mean, I'm really impressed. You've built an agency in Australia that's got doing over $5 million with a staff of 30, 800 clients globally. And you're not talking about portfolio diversification or, you know, investments. You're talking about something really very different, aren't you?
I am. And I've tried all of that, Jonathan. I remember in my early days in this industry where I'd create these amazing holistic plans that I would slave over for countless hours and that would document every single little strategy and tactic, every little last cent that I could squeeze out for a client. And if they only just followed my advice to the T, they would be completely fine. Mm-hmm. And literally a week or so after us implementing that plan, they'd fall off the rails, they wouldn't take a step, and they'd stumble. And I'd pull my hair out. I'd almost want to grab them by the shoulders and shake them and say, why are you doing this? And it was when I started discovering the power of mindset. Because you can throw strategies and tactics at a problem, but the biggest limiting factor to the value of those strategies and tactics is those invisible ceilings that you have within. And we need to raise the invisible ceilings first, and then implement the strategies and tactics to bridge the gap. And if we continue to rinse and repeat that, that is the true idea of a holistic plan. And we do a lot of work on mindset because so many of us have decades of hardwired money baggage, whether that be through our own firsthand experiences, experiences that we've observed from our parents or our loved ones. And we can't just expect a click of a switch that all of that's just going to dissipate and have no value or weight on you. And so many people overlook that because as entrepreneurs, we're always taught, look forwards, what's the next thing? And we very rarely pay homage to where we've come from. And this is the reason why I present the way that I do. I'm just present myself as an everyday bloke. I live the lifestyle that I preach to my clients. I've just spent almost a year traveling around Australia in a four-wheel drive. We've just bought a 70-acre farm and we're rescuing animals and creating a homestead and a sanctuary here. I'm doing all of these things to make the wealth and financial planning process human. Because for the vast majority of people, it's not. It's ones and zeros. And they don't understand the real significance that generational wealth can have if you do this the right way, if you do it holistically. And that's the values that I try and embody.
Would you say that most of your clients are involved in lifestyle businesses, or would you say that they have exited corporate, and have they exited corporate America or maybe even family businesses to do something more lifestyle based? Is that...
That's typically the case, mate. I think our clients fit into really two buckets. I think the corporate escapees is a big one, and they're getting into coaching and consulting and these kind of professional service businesses. Ooh. And then we've got tradespeople who have obviously been experts at their craft and then realize that they could make more money just doing it for themselves. But that doesn't always play out the way that you'd expect. But all of our clients really want a lifestyle business. Some of them do have aspirations to sell for multi-million dollars and sail off into the sunset and drink rum out of a coconut in the Bahamas. But for the vast majority of these people, their business is to provide them two things: freedom and flexibility. That's what they bought into. Mm-hmm. They started a business because they wanted to have freedom and flexibility to spend more time with their family, pick up their kids from school, go to the ballet recital, and be there, be present. But unfortunately, because of their programming and their reliance on money and their lack of a financial operating system, they've just created a job for themselves where they're working twice the hours for half the money.
True. Their entrepreneurial dream kind of warped into an everyday nightmare. That's and it. So so let's talk about, let's talk to some of these people who maybe are overwhelmed, overworked, and have gone out on their own. But, you know, you talk about a financial operating system. So do you offer a financial operating system? What does that look like? I've heard of an entrepreneurial operating system. I've heard of, other software operating system. What's a financial operating system, Jackson?
Yes, our system is called the Wealth Mastery Machine. And let's unpack that for a moment. A machine is something that produces a regular, repeated, and consistent result, ideally without fail. And the vast majority of machines do not fail. Or if they do fail, it's very, very infrequent. How many people can compare their financial processes to a machine? Very few. The vast majority of people are knee-jerk, emotional, after the fact, if they've ever got a spare moment. And they look at most financial decisions through rose-tinted glasses. Oh, that feels good. But then in 20/20 vision in hindsight, they go, oh, that was a terrible idea. Or maybe they got lucky. What we try and do is our operating system that we create, this wealth mastery machine, is about really covering the three core aspects of a really solid financial game plan. One, it's about defining, getting crystal clear on the destination, the milestones, and reverse engineering that into an action plan supported with a really simple strategy that allows us to pass strategies and tactics through pass or fail filters. It's either, hey, this strategy, this property is going to help me get my next step towards my overall financial freedom plans, or it's not. Keep it objective. The second part is create. The cornerstone of wealth creation is cash flow and surplus, because it is not the money that you make that matters. It's what you keep that counts. So what we help our clients do is we help them understand the value of maximizing their surplus and making sure that they can systematically turn their business profits into personal wealth. We support that with a really simple investment strategy that's either destroying your debts or automating your investments using very low-cost index funds and blue-chip property. Mm-hmm. Because if you're anywhere in the developed world, if you buy good quality blue-chip property where affluent people want to live long-term, it's going to go up in value. But if you can understand those fundamentals, that allows you to get it for the right price. And we don't have time to stock pick as entrepreneurs. It's been proven in the Spiva report that 82% of active fund managers underperform the market after fees and taxes. So why bother? Let's just have a set and forget strategy where we can focus on getting money into the market. And that's why I personally have all of my investments in index funds for my satellite investments. And we teach all of our clients to do the same. Because unless you're a professional stock picker, you're going to have less than an 82% chance of getting it right. And then lastly, we give them systems and processes to manage. It's about reviewing, optimizing, improving, and compounding your wealth over time. This is about allowing the snowball to roll and take effect. And once we've got all of this implemented, it takes our clients less than 30 minutes a month to manage their finances.
That's great. Now, is it done through a software? Is there an application that you've developed that you, is it done through a coach and mentoring? What's the application of it?
There's really three components. We've built really simple Google Sheets because we wanted this to be attainable, easy to understand, and basically just provide people with simple tools that they can manage this stuff. We don't need to get super sexy. Mm-hmm. The second part's the education. It's understanding these strategies, these tactics, these frameworks, these systems, and how to use them. And because once you learn that skill, you're going to have that for life, and you can also pass that on to future generations as well. And then the third part is on-track management and coaching. It's really just about sometimes putting our arm around our clients and saying, hey, look, this is all right. Take this step. Or, hey, what are your options? And helping them just play devil's advocate, look at everything from all perspectives and just support them into making the right decision for themselves. Once again, so many people abdicate financial responsibility, both personally and in their business. They go, I'm not a money manager. I don't know how to invest. I'm going to go give my money to a fiduciary or a financial advisor. And there's nothing wrong with that. However, you need to be able to have a fundamental knowledge so you can hold that person accountable to making sure they do the right thing by you, as opposed to handing over the keys to the vault and just hoping that they're going to do the right thing.
Yep. Yeah. So I'm a big believer in that. I have a money manager who invests only in ETFs. And now I have challenged him. I'm in an active program with him. So for those who are listening, don't understand the difference. Like, there's passive management and there's active management. An active fund manager, in my case, you know, he trades in and out of positions as often as necessary. So in a time when right now, the market has crashed 10%. I don't know when this episode airs, if we'll be back up to that point, but we're all in cash. So I think that active management, that all makes good sense to me. I do question whether or not the passive performs maybe better with all that, without all that trading. It's from an after, but we're not going to go down that avenue for a moment. I want to ask you about you said blue chip properties, and I assume you were talking about real estate properties. And right. So for listeners, are we talking about investing in REITs? Are we talking about investing in single family homes? Are we talking about being a limited partner? Because from my experience, when I was a limited partnership investor in real estate assets, these were multi-dwelling units, apartment buildings. I did really well on a couple of investments and really bad on the others. And the fund manager, if you will, was a bit of a thief and kind of got run out of town. And I was told he was a really good operator, but he was a bit of a cowboy. So what are we talking about? Or what are you talking about when you say blue chip properties?
I'm going to premise this with saying that there's a lot of cowboys and sharks out there, particularly in the property space. And there's been a huge amount of regulation in financial services the world around. So when it comes to fund management and having a money manager, there's a lot more regulation in place. But for some reason, globally in the developed world, there doesn't seem to be as much focus on the property market. And there's a lot of these sharks that operate. And this isn't the first time that I've heard something like that, Jonathan. So I'm a big believer in keeping it boring. And boring for me when it comes to property is buying good quality single dwelling properties where affluent families want to live long term. Mm-hmm. Because let's look at it from a fundamental standpoint. Let's use a Warren Buffett based value based approach. If we're going to look at property, the fundamental principle of property is supply and demand. If there is more demand than there is supply, then property markets will go up. Mm-hmm. So what we need to understand is five key fundamentals. First one, we need to understand net migration to an area. So are there more people moving to an area than are leaving? Because obviously the more people that move there, the more dwellings that need to be available, meaning that demand will go up. Second thing, is there diverse ranges of employment? So we don't want to be in an area where we're reliant on a single sector of employment. So for example, we've seen many areas, let's say like Detroit in the boom of the automotive industry. Look at Detroit now, decimated.
Yep.
So we want to make sure that we have a diverse range of employment, that we're supported by multiple sectors. Third thing, we want to make sure that there's infrastructure spending, because the government spends to incentivize behavior. So we want to make sure they're investing in things like railroads and airports and shopping centers, all of this public infrastructure, but also private infrastructure, things that make a place more livable, cafes and restaurants and all of these things that make it a nice place to want to live long term. Then we want to consider future supply. So we need to be considerate of building or buying a property smack bang in the middle of a CBD, middle of a city, because typically local councils and governments allow relaxed zoning restrictions. That's why towers and big apartment complexes pop up everywhere. And then on the flip side, we don't want to necessarily buy on fringes of cities where there's what's called greenfield land, because they can just build an abundance of property and oversupply the market. And then the last fundamental to understand is affordability. This is not what you can afford. This is what the local population can afford, because supply and demand only goes to a point where the local population can no longer afford to buy that property. And that's where we start to see property prices taper off. So if you look at any what we call a blue chip area, mm-hmm. Think in your locality, the suburb, the location where all of the affluent families want to live, mm-hmm. and go and assess it by those five fundamentals. Mm-hmm. And I suspect that they will always stack up, because those are the things that draw people to an area.
Love that. So it was net migration was not in the right order. Affordability. It was, help me out here.
Diverse employment.
Diverse employment, of course.
Yep. Infrastructure.
Infrastructure. Love that. Government and, investment.
And future supply.
Future supply. Fantastic. Great way of thinking about it. All right. Let's turn back towards the business owner and their issues. I know one of your hot topics is leveling up your profits in less than 30 minutes a month. Tell me what that is.
Yes. So I think as business owners, and I've been guilty of this myself, we get stuck into chasing vanity metrics. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I want to get to that 100K month, or right. I want to get to that 200K month, or the 500K month, or whatever the number might be.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, what ultimately happens here is a phenomena that we refer to as cash flow creep. Mm-hmm. And it's driven by a behavioral principle called Parkinson's Law. Now, are you familiar with it, Jonathan?
I'm familiar with Parkinson's disease, but not Parkinson's Law.
Okay, cool. You're going to love this. So Parkinson's Law was a behavioral principle that was discovered that basically governs all of us as human beings. And what it means is that as human beings, we use the means that we have available. So the more means we have, the more means we use. So a great example is back at school, when you had an assignment that had 8 weeks to complete, when did you start that assignment, Jonathan?
So like 1 week into the 1 week left. Yep. And sometimes I'd started in 8 weeks and then I'm good to go. Let it sit here, then 2 weeks before I would finish.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Typically, we might start at the beginning a little bit, but we ramp up as we get towards the end of the deadline. And I'm sure if your teacher said, do you do it in 4 weeks? It just would have been a condensed time frame.
Correct.
That's Parkinson's Law in play. The exact same thing happens with our money. So as a business owner, we've got to realize that our business has magnitudes more money than we've ever dealt with in our entire life. It's just huge amounts of cash flow that's flowing through. So many different income sources and expenses, and it becomes really, really hard to track, and it's quite ambiguous. Mm-hmm. But what often happens is that as that revenue grows, our expenses grow in proportion and sometimes in excess of that growth. And that's where our business turns into a cash eating monster. The problem is that we don't have the right buckets to segment our finances, and we're often relying on our profit and loss, which is often using accrual-based accounting. And as business owners, we pull our hair out when we ask our accountant, why doesn't my bank balance match what my profit and loss statement says?
Right.
And accountants can't tell us because they speak another language. So as a business owner, cash is king. And the best way for you to manage your finances in your business is bank balance accounting. Mm-hmm. However, when you've got one account that we call the single account sinkhole, where all of the money comes in and all of your expenses come out, you can't possibly keep a finger on the pulse. So what we implement is a German word that's called Fingerspritzengefühl, which means finger touch. Like a doctor or a surgeon, when they're doing microsurgery, they have really fine motor skills. We need to develop those motor skills when it comes to managing our money in our business. And how we do that is we set up a series of buckets. We call them serving plates. We have an income account where your money comes into, all of your income. If you've got cost of sales in your business, so variable expenses, you've got materials, suppliers, subcontractors, we have a separate bucket that we carve off a percentage to cover those variable costs. Then we've got four remaining buckets: operating expenses, to cover your fixed expenses in the business, salaried employees, rent, utilities, bills, anything else. Owners pay, paying you, the number one employee of your business, making sure there's always money set aside for you to be able to take a fixed income. We've got a tax bucket, making sure that we can cover for sales tax, state taxes, federal taxes, any other taxes we need to pay. And then we've got a profit bucket, making sure that we're putting money aside to reward you as a shareholder of your business. Because the reality is you should get two paychecks. A paycheck is an employee in your business for the work you do in it. Mm-hmm. And a profit distribution is a shareholder to reward you for the risk that you take for being in small business.
We're totally aligned on that. It sounds a lot like Michael Michalowicz's profit first approach. Imagine you're familiar with that. You're shaking your head.
I am.
And yes. So that's an interesting way of going about doing it. I think some people probably find it a bit complicated to perfect or to do, and they find they have a lot of bank accounts that they're juggling. So, which I imagine in the beginning is probably stressful because some of those bank accounts might be running at meager or possibly negative balances. Challenging.
Definitely. And look, it is challenging. It is what we call a come to Jesus moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because what was happening before is that we're having all your money in one bucket. You were just borrowing from Peter to pay Paul.
Right.
And what this will do is it creates the transparency for you to identify the cash flow bottleneck so then we can work on fixing it.
Right.
So it might be, hey, you're overspending. We've got to optimize those expenses and trim some of the fat. But my perspective on this is, Jonathan, that there's only so much fat you can cut before you start cutting into muscle and you actually start compromising your ability to grow your business. So what this typically does is this tells us how much income we need to have producing for our current expenses. And that allows us to then look at what we call the seven levers. These are ways to drive profit by increasing our income in creative ways.
Mm-hmm.
And what's probably more important here is that we need to link your profit target to your personal income goals based on the CAKE method. We define our 20-year roadmap. We reverse engineer that into a personal income target for you to have your cake and eat it too. To achieve that income target, we set a profit target. How much profit does your business need to produce to pay you that income, but also still have enough surplus to allow you to grow and achieve your goals in your business? Then to make that profit, how much revenue do you need to make? And then we reverse engineer that revenue into all of your lead KPIs. So what we do is we connect all of your activity in your business to your personal outcomes that are critically important to you. And this allows us to start shifting the mindset because we now have complete clarity around the outcomes of our actions.
Boy, Jackson, you're so articulate. And I love the way you put this all together. And it's very well organized in your head. And I think that's probably one of the biggest challenges for busy business owners is they're so busy working in their businesses that it's hard for them to think clearly through all this stuff. And it sounds like you have a lot of clarity. And I suspect that this has been pushed down through your entire team. So what's the number one myth about scaling a business that is eating small businesses alive?
Yeah, this is a really good one. I've fallen into this trap myself too. Many business owners are taught that in order to scale, you need to burn cash. And I think because we're in this era of kind of like the dot-com bubble, and we've seen these startups, these big technology companies that are honestly cash eating monsters. The amount of money that they burn through is absolutely ridiculous. And how they can obtain these valuations is nuts. Many of them aren't profitable,
right,
and many of them fail. But I think this has really created a really bad precedent for small business owners. Because the reality is the vast majority of us aren't in a SaaS business. We're not in a tech business. So we're in a service business. And a service business fundamentally is about producing cash flow. So this is about getting out of making that excuse of saying, okay, for me to scale, I need to burn cash. And you need to flip that is what would my scale plan need to look like for me to scale profitably?
So I like that. You know, I like where you're coming from. I like the perspective. I think your philosophy around money is that it's not a destination, which is what probably most of us are trained to think, that when I have 5 million or 10 million or whatever, your 1 million, whatever your number is, 1 million isn't what it used to be, by the way, right?
Yeah.
But it's really your vehicle. And it sounds like you've integrated your values into your life, the farm that you were talking about, the give back, the living in an RV and traveling around. Sounds like quite a lot of fun. And so I imagine that enjoying the journey and the vehicle that you're in is all what this what life here is all about. Am I right?
I agree, mate. Because I have no intention to retire, and I'm treating this like a marathon, but it's an enjoyable marathon. It's a fun run, right?
Right. Yeah.
That you deserve to reap the rewards of your hard work along the way, not squirreling away every last red cent, waiting until you're 60 or 65 to live the dream. Because I unfortunately lost my father to pancreatic cancer at 66.
Mm.
He worked 16-hour days, 7 days a week for his entire life. And there's probably very few instances throughout my entire childhood that I didn't see him with sweat on his brow. And he was chasing that golden retirement, Ooh. The golden years, to be able to enjoy the fruits of his labor. And he didn't even get to enjoy 1 year of it.
Wow.
And on his deathbed, as he laid there in the hospital, he gave me one last piece of advice. And he said, Jackson, every person in this world has two lives. And your second life starts when you realize that you only have one. And when he passed away, that gave me the opportunity at my second life, and you deserve that second life too. So I live for today, plan for tomorrow. You can have your cake and eat it too.
Sounds good. Jackson, it's been a pleasure talking with you. If people want to learn more about your company, your business, I know you have a website, wealth-mentor.com.au, as in Australia. Is that the best way people should find you and your company? Or
yep, that's a way. We're also going to give your listeners and watchers some bonuses. So guys, I've got a gift pack where you can get access to my best-selling books. And there's a 40-point financial performance scorecard that'll help you work out how you're tracking financially. The scary thing, guys, is that the average score is about 18 out of 40. And we've done this with thousands of business owners.
Wow.
But what this will help you do is work out what's the low-hanging fruit that you can improve. And also, if you want to get in touch with us, you can get it there. So I'm sure there'll be a link in the show notes, but it's book.wealth-mentor.com.au/gift-page.
Okay,
I'll include a link so you can track that in the chat.
Perfect. Awesome. So it was book, once again?
book.wealth-mentor.com.au/gift-page.
Okay, fantastic. And we'll include those in the show notes. Jackson, thanks for being on the show and for sharing your wisdom, your heart and your mind with my listeners today.
My absolute pleasure.
Awesome. Okay, folks, if you like this episode, please share it with others. We will share it with your friends if you don't share it with them first.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.